Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Kollerbach. With me, Anthony Guarino.
I'm here.
We're just hanging out. You know, I'm doing, later on, we're going to talk to my Muay Thai teacher. I've been bragging about how I can kick people's ass with Muay Thai lately because I've been studying it. So I like to, you know.
Almost nonstop. I've gotten the monogrammed pillows that say, I can crush you.
But yeah, that was my housewarming gift to you as you moved into Los Angeles.
It was a series of three monogram pillows for
with different threats on them.
Yeah.
And me striking different kind of Muay Thai poses.
And with, like, various stitching that obviously it's it's not a set, you know. I mean, like, in the clear verbal intent to harm or threat it is, but in terms of actually being laid out on an actual futon or sofa, you'd probably have a pretty hard time really getting them all in there because they, you know, because of the thatching.
Yeah.
But the threats are all very dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, just it's an abrasive material, and I wanted it to be like if they were all laid out on a pillow, it would be like if you would jump on that couch, it would almost like be like you got in a fight. Like you had to battle me in the different positions because it's such a rough fabric. It's like cutting your face on sandpaper.
You know? One of them was a hot air balloon filled with blood, dried blood that. But if you laid on it long enough, it would kind of seep out.
Some of them have razor blades, too, in them. If so, you know, they're very dangerous. I wanted to, you know, definitely in as many incessant ways possible say that I'm a dangerous person. You know, I want to get that propaganda out there.
The thing with your Muay Thai guy, right?
Yeah.
Was that you were ordering
Muay Thais off him. He was a bartender.
You were ordering Muay Thais.
Yeah.
You said, you great at this.
Yeah.
You teach me.
It was just so fast. He would serve me up some Mai Tais, and I was like, I gotta learn this. It's like it's almost like an art, you know, some kind of like.
And then you did 3 weeks with him of like Tom Cruise, like cocktail ass, just kind of thrown up with stuff. And then you're like, no. I meant the other stuff. And he's like, oh. And then he gave you a 6 week intensive and tantric lovemaking. And then you're like, no. But you know, the other...
It's not the right one.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you want to know...
About Muay Thai.
You want to know about the karate.
So that's what we'll talk about later. That's coming up at the end of this episode. But then we're just kind of hanging out. We're hosting that episode. It's episode 79. I want to plug some dates, actually. I'm going to be playing at the Ice House for the first time, July 13th. Ice House Pasadena, Wednesday, July 13th at 7:30. Also, check me out May 29th at Flappers Burbank in the Yoohoo Room. You know, click through the Highway Diary Amazon link, buy shit on Amazon. I want to just get all those plugs off on the. Let me talk about something else I want to talk about. You recently got married.
Yeah, that's true.
I was at your wedding. It was very simple, very beautiful. Series of speeches. I felt like, talk about your getting your giggle cup filled up. I felt like I was getting my love cup filled up. It was like the sweetest thing, you know. It was like almost like turned into like some kind of retreat of, you know, where everyone talked about how lovely you guys were as a couple, you know.
Yeah, it was super nice. It was fun. It was kind of like went up going off the rails because we had like we had this thing booked at this like you know, super itai like restaurant catering hall thing. Well, we just wanted it to be a simple thing. We were just going to do it at City Hall. And then my parents wanted to do a nicer thing. So we had this really weeded out restaurant in like New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked in there, like, you know, and there was just like, there was a, like, you know, just a room full of like middle age, like sixth to ninth graders watching like their highlights of their basketball team on a plasma screen.
They had a great season. Yeah. If you look at their like field throw percentage from the field, I mean, like, you know, talk about obesity. I mean, these kids were fucking hustling. So
some of these smaller guys, I mean, like defensively, they actually improved a lot from last season, even though they didn't score as many points, which is kind of like a, you know, confusing. Yeah. But they did well, and And then, so we were forced to share the space with these sixth graders having their, like, basketball team, like, festive jam.
It was funny because we walked in and the coach for that basketball team was giving a teary speech, like, you know, we really had a good season, guys. Okay, I'm sorry, dude. Okay, listen, Jeremy,
when you stuffed, I'm sorry, I get really, like, you know,
and then you guys had the wedding, and then, like, everyone was coming out giving speeches, and it was like we were just sharing in each other's, like, good celebration day, you know?
Yeah, and the judge had to be, like, to, like, ask the kids, hey, can you be quiet real quick so we could, like, get married in the restaurant? But they
were getting a little rowdy at
just,
times.
We were just, like, it was, when you think of, like, you know, you can just kind of get married anywhere really quick, like, just, like, get a corner and be like, hey, can you just be quiet and just... like bam it out,
yeah.
But then it became kind of like a fun thing where we kind of like became like this synchronous event, you know?
Yeah,
where everybody had fun. They were actually really nice, and they wanted like getting us gifts and shit.
Yeah,
like,
they got you some booze.
They got us like a really expensive like magnum of champagne, $200, and then they gave us like $100 in lottery tickets, which is so New Jersey. $100 in lottery tickets.
I got $100. Let it ride.
Yeah.
10%. Well, you know, Corazon's got to plug up some bridges or whatever.
I'm at the point now where, like, whenever I, like, don't win on a lottery ticket, I'm, like a little shook by it. Like I never, like...
You're so hopeful during the whole scratching process. It's such a long process.
I never pursue getting a lottery ticket because it's just, like, you know, silly. But, like, when they come into my hands, I'm like, this is meant to be, you know? It's like, I gotta, like, get up for it, you know? And then when I don't win, I'm, like, very surprised. I'm always very surprised that I haven't won.
Because you like, read what? The thing, and it's like, okay, if I get 12 cherries, you know, in a row, then I win. So it's like, by the time you learn the game, you start building your hopes up that, like, oh, well, I'll get $1,000 a day for the rest of my life.
When I don't win a scratch-off that has come into my hands, I'm like, you know, a basketball player, like, looking at the ref, like, what? Like an obvious foul. I'm like, what?
You didn't see the foul?
You didn't see it?
Because I was...
I'm bleeding from my nose.
This is a magical moment. I got this lottery ticket on my wedding, so it should pay off for me. So, Lee and Andrew, I met up with them. I was on the train with them.
Yeah, you guys hit it off.
Yeah, how would you describe Lee to people who don't know? He's just like the ultimate bro master. He is a weaver of bro. He's constantly, on the prowl.
You know, he's a complicated man. You know, he's a broman. You know, he's like kind of, in some ways you could, if you wanted to, in a simplistic way, look at him as the quintessential broman.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he's also very intelligent and has, like, this, like, very kind heart, you know, and, like, it's very, like, kind of emotionally intelligent in this weird way. So it's, like, it's kind of like a double-edged, you know. Like, he has, like, this kind of, like, fun persona that's, like, very bro-y and stuff. But he also is, like, very kind of, like, like, kind of this great guy that's, like, you know, like, surprises you all the time with these kind of, like, really kind things, you know?
He had me rolling when we were on the
And he's hilarious as shit, too.
He's hilarious. Yeah. He's just such a reckless kind of, like, you know, he does, like, Wall Street stuff. He's, like, this weird, like, high-pressure animal.
He does, like, advertisement stuff. Like, he's, like, Mad Men style. Like, takes people out, clients out and shit and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like, you can imagine him being, like, awesome at that, you know?
Yeah, so it's just great to run into those people.
Yeah, so it's fun to see, like, it was cool to see you and him kind of, like, hit it off.
The melding
It's, like, weird seeing, like, the kind of, like, couples that hit it off, and then, like, this guy, it's kind of, like, one of my dad's, like, kind of, like, you know, like, beefy kind of, like, maybe mob friends. was, like, hit it off with some other, like, somebody I met, like, an acting class, and it was, like, weird to see happen, and I was, like, oh, cool. And it's, like, it's, like, a weird event where just, like, you know, everything kind of came together.
So what's going on? There was kind of a table at your wedding that was kind of, like, you know, your dad's friends, you know? There was kind of, like, a little bit of a Goomba, you know? They were making deals, you know? They seemed to be into the, you know, what do you think's going on over there? What kind of business are they running over there?
Well, they're just, like, all old.
This old Italian. It's,
figuring out how to stay alive, I guess. they're all really nice guys, though. They're all, like, really colorful characters. Like,
so it's kind of vague as far as how exactly they make a living, though, you know?
You know, they're all, like, you know, involved in, like, they're, like, all, like, involved in weird, like, interesting stuff, like meats and stuff and, like, shit. And, like, I think, like, one guy, like, owns, like, a really cool... He owns, like, an auto body shop, but he's also, like, a meat distributor for, like, the whole, like, Northeast, you know? Like, or New Jersey, and he's, like, a really nice guy, and,
You think he's greasing any wheels with his meat products?
Literally. pun very much intended.
lied and banking and such could be used as a, I'm not saying it was, I'm just saying the double entendre.
If there was a pun to be in Toy Beat, this one's called Exploding Into Your Life.
The song?
With me, Jonathan Atkinson. What's going on, man? You're my Muay Thai coach.
Hey, man. How you doing?
We train at a Muay Thai Academy of America.
Yep, over in North Hollywood.
I'm Van Nolan, Big Blue Building. You know, the main instructor's Crew Puck. He's like a father figure to you, you know, gave you a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And you were saying he's not just like a physical coach, but like a spiritual mentor, you know?
Yeah, he can help you with some spiritual cleansing. You know,
yeah,
he's
from Thailand.
Yeah, he's a father figure to us all. He goes beyond just teaching the sport and the athletic part of it and the physical part. You know, he teaches respect and loyalty and discipline as well, and to have respect for yourself as well as others.
Yeah, you know, we always pray to Father Muay Thai at the beginning and end of class, and you know, we've been talking about this. It's just I really kind of want to do some kind of Muay Thai competition at least once in my life. Because every time I pray to Father Muay Thai, like as my spirit animal or spiritual guru, you know what he tells me to do? Kick ass. You know, that's pretty much what Father Muay Thai is about. So.
Yeah, you just got to keep training hard, man, and give it your all. See, when I started, before I started this, I had already sacrificed my flesh to it because I knew it was going to hurt. In order for me to get to the level that I'm trying to get to, and I'm still nowhere near where I'm trying to get to, you gotta sacrifice a lot of things in your life.
I come in a bunch of times. You were always watching Enter the Dragon. Bruce Lee's a big mentor to you.
Oh, yeah.
You were telling me this one. You were like, watch this one part. And then Bruce Lee tells one of his, like, students, one of his pupils comes up to him and is like, you know, you're not even... fighting, you just let it happen, you know? Yeah. It's like you just reacting to the situation.
You don't think about it, you gotta feel the moment.
I feel like today when we were sparred, I started to get that, where I'm actually able to relax, so I'm not always telegraphing what I'm gonna do, because I don't know what I'm gonna do, because I react to the distance.
Yeah, don't think about it, you gotta feel it. But that right there alone comes with a lot of repetition. And just doing the stuff over and over and over again, so that way it becomes muscle memory.
Yeah. So you were telling me that you had a crazy birthday a little while ago. You had a bunch of rock metal bands, heavy metal bands come into the thing. Almost burned down the gym, you know?
No, that was at this other place.
Oh, okay.
This one was actually pretty cool. Everything was mellow in order. Them fools were, that was at Mike's Pub. They were, like, crazy.
So you had a death metal band over there at Mike's Pub for your birthday, and then they almost
six
metal bands.
And one of them almost burnt.
How'd you organize this thing, you know?
Well, I have some friends that are in a metal band, and they put it all together for me. They said, "What do you want for your birthday?" I said, "A concert. I want a show." And they was like, "Word, don't say no more." And it was all for free. I didn't pay nothing.
That's cool. Did you start, like, doing bands when you first came out here?
What do you mean?
To Los Angeles?
Like,
are you in any bands or anything?
Oh, no, I've never been in a band myself. I've always loved music, and death metal is one of my favorite genres.
Yeah. And, you know, Brian Velasco also trains out of here. He's at the last bass player.
He's in Switzerland right now.
Yeah, touring all over the place.
Yeah. I think he's with Everlast over there.
Yeah. So you were also telling me a story, like you got in a motorcycle accident, like last year, or was it 2 years ago?
Oh yeah, last year, last February.
Yeah. So you want to tell me about that? Do you feel comfortable talking about that?
Oh yeah, I'm fine,
There was a lot of spiritual things going on right there.
Yeah, there was some,
what happened? You know, you're a very spiritual person, you saw some things on the road that night, what happened?
Yeah, it was just the universe telling me to slow down. I was about to do some things. Like, I had a fight coming up, and I was going to go a little bit too far with my opponent. and I wasn't listening to people tell me don't do that. I wasn't listening to myself when I knew myself I shouldn't do that, because that person had nothing to do with how I was feeling. And yeah, I wasn't listening. So finally it took a motorcycle accident for me to listen.
So you felt like you were gonna do some damage to your opponent.
I knew. Not to be arrogant or nothing, but I knew that I was gonna do some damage.
That's what you were planning on, and then you feel like the motorcycle accident kind of slowed you down.
Yeah, it helped me
understand something.
It helped me understand and see why I'm involved in Muay Thai. Because when I was in the hospital, I had no windows, no television, nothing. I just had just my thoughts. And I sit there, and, you know, I realized I'm in Muay Thai. I've changed so many people's lives. I've helped so many people get in shape, build confidence. And I was about to throw all of that away by hurting someone, one person. And it helped me understand that I got off my path. I'm in Muay Thai to help, not to hurt, you know? So, yeah,
I can say personally, you know, you really helped me with Muay Thai. You know, I feel like I got more confidence. I feel like, you know, when you walk around with the knowledge that, you know, you can, you know, beat up most people or just defend yourself. Just defend yourself if something happens. You know, how can that not give you just knowing what to do in a situation?
And that's all I want everybody. That's why I keep, you hear me say the same thing over and over again to a lot of people. Get your hands up. Get your hands up, do this, get your footwork right, do that. Because it's precision, man. You have to be precise with your technique. And if one little slip up can cost you.
Yeah.
It can cost you. You can either be hurt by the person or just straight up hurt yourself from not doing the move properly.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, it's good to have the confidence that you can take care of yourself if one of these mean people come up and try to do something to you, because there's a lot of idiots, you know, they get on their alcohol or whatever the case may be. They're courage juice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They just get stupid. They just want to try something.
Yeah, they want to impress their friends or impress girls and stuff. But if you can avoid any situation, don't use this out in the streets, man. Just try your best to walk away, get away from the situation without any violence. And if the person touches you, you know, then right. You do what you have to do.
Then, you know, if you take out one person with a jump front push kick to the face or something like that, like, then it would let the other friends know, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't jump on this guy. Maybe he's got some moves for us, you know?
Yeah, just still be careful, especially if there's multiple people, man. That's why I do my best. If you notice, I don't go out.
Yeah.
I'm always here. This is my home. This is my temple. I moved in here, man, back in a few months before my birthday party. May 2010. Like, and I'm safe here. People say I'm isolating myself and blah, 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 blah. No. I'm conditioning my mind and my spirit as well as my body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't work.
You work, just work at the gym.
Yeah, I was where I was working. I was a motion capture technician over at the Henson lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've worked on video games. I've acted in video games. Worked on movies.
Motion capture?
Yeah.
You put a green suit on you and have you walk around and stuff?
No, I've done that. I've done that, really? But I was the technician. Like, for example, have you seen the movie Green Lantern?
Yes.
The beginning of that animated section,
yeah.
That's all my work.
Oh, yeah?
Me and my company. I cleaned up the data for that.
Like doing visual effects for it and stuff?
Yeah. We made the dudes move. We recorded the movements.
That's
badass. After my accident and stuff, I just let all that go.
So when did you come out here to do motion graphics, or did you come out here to do Muay Thai?
I came out here to be in the film industry.
Yeah.
But that wasn't what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Man, I've come so far in my mind because of this place and because of Crew Pup.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to explain it in words. All I know is I feel the change in myself. I can even step outside of myself and see the change in myself. I smile so much more. I'm back laughing again.
Yeah. You always describe like hanging out with the kids and teaching them Muay Thai, you know? Like, oh, do you man. See how crazy is it to like watch all those kids like, you know, transform with Muay Thai?
You know,
is it like a similar kind of thing with each of the kids, you know? Watching them enlighten them or whatever.
For them, it's not enlightening. I don't see it as the enlightening for them because they're not yet really paying attention to the mental aspect of it. They're more focused on doing the moves right.
Right.
They're more, and I notice that they're focusing on getting the moves right, and they keep looking at their parents to see if their parents are watching them. It's like, see, I'm doing it. Yeah, they're not looking at the enlightening part of it. They're just trying to impress their parents and impress the teachers and stuff. And they're doing awesome. I'm very proud of the kids, students. We have a great batch.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you want your kid to fight obesity. You want to get his health in order, you know.
Yeah, because look at what... How many kids do you see playing outside nowadays?
Yeah. Exactly. And if you're worried about bullying, that's a big problem. Boom, Muay Thai takes care of that.
Man, kids nowadays don't have to worry about bullying because they're not even outside. They're in the house on their video games, dude.
Well, they get cyber-bullied and then, like, cited as a terrorist because they say, I'm going to kill you, like, like, a Call of Duty game.
Yeah.
What do you think about that shit? Like, all this, like, zero-tolerance policies with kids, you know? All that. It's crazy.
Yeah, times are changing, man.
Can't get away with nothing. I used to do a lot of bullying, and I got bullied a lot, and it put a fucking...
You used to be a bully?
I would put a fire in my belly. You know, look, in New Jersey...
Man, you don't seem like the bully type, dude.
In New Jersey, everyone would just dog on each other way more. There's a culture of, if someone came up with a stupid shirt or like a silver jacket and tried to look cool, it's like, get out of here with this shiny motherfucker. You know what I mean?
Power Ranger shit, huh?
Yeah, just, like, you know, we wouldn't let each other get away with stuff. We would always bust balls and stuff like that. So I feel like I came out of culture where, you know, all my friends and I would just talk shit on each other. You know, like the Superbad movie where, you know what I mean? It's just like, that's the...
Yeah.
Just like, you're never gonna get pussy or, you know, whatever. Yeah. You're just talking crazy shit to each other. So, you know, is that bullying or is that, you know? I think that's important later on, you know? Like, if you're not used to, like, getting your balls broken and then, like, you know, some boss... You know what I mean? Does it? You know how to handle yourself. It's because it's like, oh my God, you know, they said this, so...
Yeah.
Did you get bullied as a kid in high school?
No.
You were cool?
You know what? When I was in grade school, because I grew up in a very small village, so I knew everybody, so everybody was my homie in grade school.
In Texas?
No, in Oklahoma.
Oh, Oklahoma, that's right.
And then, when I moved away for high school, and I pretty much just stayed by myself, and no one bullied me.
Mm-hmm.
I just stayed by myself and just went through high school, graduated, and started my life.
And then you went to the Army?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
one of our teammates is going to the Marines tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Who? Yeah, Daniel. You know Skinny Daniel Murillo?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he came by today to say goodbye.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where's he going?
I don't know. But he's going to be gone in total 6 months. He's going to go 3, come back for 10 days, and out again.
Where did you get deployed?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Korea.
Really?
Korea, and then I came here and finished in Texas.
So you're just on a base over there?
Yeah, I should have stayed over there.
In South Korea?
Yeah. But winter time was my deciding factor on coming back to the United States. Fuck that.
It's freezing there?
Ooh.
What's it like in South Korea?
Dope.
Yeah?
Super dope.
Really clean streets?
No.
No? Dirty? Polluted?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not. It's a metropolis, dude. It's another L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Just big and dirty and full of people. And crowded, but it's fun as shit.
Can you get by speaking English? Is there enough stuff going on in English?
Yeah. Because there's a ton of, like, everything over there.
Right.
Like, it's not just Koreans over there.
Right.
There's all kind of foreign exchange students and everything, man. That place was dope. That was the best time of my life. But, like, as I said, wintertime, fuck that.
What'd you do every day? Just, like, boot camps and drills and, you know?
No, I did my job. I was at work. Like, in basic boot camp, that's where you train to do your job.
So what was your job over there?
I was a combat engineer. So I pretty much was a bridge. I built bridges, blew up stuff, played with explosives, and drove trucks. So, and I would just be, like, during the day.
Yeah.
We would be just down there on the line with our trucks, doing stuff on the line. And then... Yeah.
And then just building a combat bridge.
That's when we went out
to the... And then blowing it up.
When we went out to the field, we wouldn't blow these up, but we did explosive training. But the only time we did building was when we went to the field. Mainly, I was in the base until it was time for us to go to the field. But we would do our normal work day, like check on our trucks, maintenance on our trucks and stuff like that, and our bridge parts. And then after work at 5 o'clock... Get off. We can go do whatever we wanted to do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it was just like a 9-to-5 kind of hang.
Yeah. But in Korea. But that shit was stressful too, man, because we almost went to war with North Korea 3 times that year I was over there.
Yeah.
The day I got there, there was 1 million North Koreans on the DMZ ready to cross and fight. Then, another time we almost went, and then a week before I flew back to the States, we almost went to war.
What's with this Kim Jong-il and Kim Jong-un? You know, I see the Vice documentaries, and, you know, when he enters a room...
Hey, you know what's wrong with them?
What?
They need to smoke weed.
Yeah. They make that shit illegal so that you can't... You start getting bigger ideas other than Kim Jong-il is the greatest person who's ever lived.
Like, how about we go hook up with these Americans... And smoke some of their weed.
Yeah. Talk to them about philosophy and space.
Yeah.
But instead... You know, there's all this crazy stuff where, you know, you know, it's like he's really their religion. So every success in their life, they thank Kim Jong-un.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. They got songs and shit to him.
Yeah. It's like he is the deity and the dictator. Yeah. And he just kills his uncle when he's like, you know what? These are the... Charges executed.
Yeah, like, Kim Il Jong's dad was like God, and Kim Il Jong was Jesus.
Right.
And those people are they're crazy about those dudes. Even the kids, like the little kids, yeah.
And like imagine like being raised, and every day they're telling you. You are the God. You are the God. How do you not just become like a bleary-eyed sociopath? Just like, I'm the greatest person ever. You're dead. Well, you two, fight for me.
Well, see...
I want a turkey. Like, it's just like...
He's already like that because the only reason why they tell him, you're the God, because if they don't, he'll smoke them.
Yeah.
So...
And it's like to the point where when he enters a room, there's like 25 minutes of a standing ovation, and everyone's afraid to be the first one to sit down, because then they're not as supportive as the other. You know, everyone else gave him 26 and a half minutes.
Executed.
So
off with his head.
Yeah. So there's like this mass hysteria, kind of like worse than the Beatles. You know, like
I got to go on the DMZ while I was there. I could hear. Kim Il Jong's propaganda on the loudspeaker.
What's a DM? What are you saying?
The demilitarization zone.
Okay.
The line between the borderline of North Korea. South Korea.
What's there? What does that look like?
Well, they got like this base up there, and I went to the gun weapons range. I was shooting this, the M249 SAW, and we could hear the North Koreans down the hill, like, marching and calling cadence and stuff, and then we could hear his propaganda on the loudspeaker.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was pretty creepy. But I, at the same time, like I said, man, that shit was fun. Super fun.
Just run, driving around in Jeeps, putting up a bridge, up a bridge.
No, I was driving a 5-ton truck. Oh, but, yeah. Like, we were, we, man, okay. See.
What was so fun about it?
We weren't in the field every day.
Yeah.
We were at a base that was in the middle of, like, say, L.A.
Right, right, right. It was a cool city.
Right outside my gate was a fucking bar with a brothel where you could go and pay for chicks.
All right.
And then it was all kind, man, yeah, I was in the heart of the city.
There's some perks going on here.
Yeah, so we would just do our job on the base, eat and go out into the city, do whatever. We could go to Seoul. But we mainly went to Seoul on the weekends. And, yeah, man, it was, we were party.
Well, you guys, like, gamble each other? My cousin was in the Navy, so they would, like, play Texas Hold'em every night and, like, gamble the whole, like, their whole paychecks.
No.
Okay, you never did that shit?
We would just, during the week, we would like, mainly chill in our rooms, drink whatever, do whatever, chill, watch movies, play video games. Get our uniforms ready for the next day. If we needed to go out and do shopping, we'd go out and do shopping. Right up the street was another camp, another base. And on Fridays after work, we would all go to the club up at that base. Yeah. And we had to be back by 1 o'clock because of where we were at, like with the hot bit, with Korean being a hot spot and stuff. So we had to be back at 1 o'clock. I would come back at 1 o'clock from the club, from that one, and watch the fights in Lumpini Stadium in Thailand. Oh, cool, they would televise it. So every Friday night, I would come from the club and watch Muay Thai fights at home in my barracks. And then on Saturday, we would go to Seoul. Now, we weren't supposed to be down there because you have to have a pass if you're going to stay overnight. We weren't supposed to be down there, but we would stay all night, man. We would go to the club on the base and get out of there. They would close at 2 o'clock, and then we went to this club on Hooker Hill. And, man, that place was dope. It was just a hill, these streets, as far as you could see, food spots, bars, clubs,
yeah,
bars with where you pay for chicks, man. And we would go to this place called the Liberty Club, man, and all you saw is just Korean people, just foreign exchange students, people from Africa, France, everywhere, and everybody was cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And we would go to the Liberty Club, and this is back when I used to drink, man. I used to get so faded over there. And we would drink all night and dance and party in the Liberty Club. And when we come out, it would be, the sun would be up and shining bright. It would be like 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And we would stagger down Hooker Hill and run back to the base, then catch the bus all the way back to our base, because our base was kind of like from here to Long Beach from Seoul.
Yeah.
But just think mad traffic, though. Yeah. Sometimes it'd
be 2.5-3 hours.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes. So we would rush back to base and get back without getting caught. Did this my whole tour over there.
So you just had to be there at Sunday at like noon or whatever?
No. We were supposed to be there Saturday at 12:59.
Oh shit.
But we was like, fuck that, man. Let's go have fun, man. Man, the Liberty Club was dope. And we would just get drunk, dance all night, and rush back home in the morning. Matter of fact, I fucking almost missed my flight coming back to the States because of that shit. I got really faded.
Yeah.
And at this time, I was messing with this lieutenant colonel's daughter. So
People would have been pissed off.
No, it was a she.
Oh.
And so,
would she have been cool with the arrangement? Or?
Oh, hell no.
Man.
So, I was kicking it with her in the club and almost missed my flight, but I got it hooked up. A sergeant came and rescued me that I was cool with. Because, see, I get cool with the people in the higher-ups.
Right.
So that way...
Then they can helicopter you out of somewhere if you need to.
Nah, they come and just catch the bus and come and get my ass. But it was fun, man. I did a lot of shopping over there.
Mm-hmm.
I never did buy any prostitutes because they got some scary disease over there. Where, like, if you catch it, you can't never come back to the United States.
What?
Yeah, they put you on some quarantined island until you die.
What?
And like, the way they tell you, they don't tell you, like, okay, let's say you go to one of the brothels.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell you exactly. If someone in there has it, they don't tell you who has it. They'll put a pile of rice out in front of the door to let you know someone in there has that shit. And it's up to you whether you want to go gamble with your life. You speak of Texas Hold'em and gamble. I used to watch my homies and battle buddies go gamble with their shit like that.
They would put to signal if they had gonorrhea, if they were nice to you,
the
subtle clue, or some kind of explosive Korean nuclear.
To let you know somebody in that club has that disease, they'll put a pile of rice in front of the door.
Of the hooker house, right.
So, yeah. Our sergeants warned us of that shit. And I saw it often, so I kept cool. You know?
You didn't just use the rice policy and just avoid those hookers? You know?
They don't tell you which one of the hookers have it.
I thought it was like inside the brothel, there'd be like a row of doors, and then like two
they'd
of the
be
doors
like, don't
would,
go
have,
in this one, huh?
Would have like bowls of rice in front of the door.
Oh,
like,
no,
okay,
no.
They put it
outside the front of the door of the club.
Oh.
Like, hey, someone in here is hooked up.
What if you're like, oh, is that guy just leaving? Did someone leave their takeout here, or is this like a signal?
Smoke signal. Yeah. All clear smoke signal.
Where? What would they have if they were all clean?
Nothing.
Like a freshly cut papaya. Just looks beautiful. And
no,
like,
man, it would be just, it wouldn't have nothing out there. You go in there and.
Yo, this pussy be fresh. Check out this papaya.
Check the papaya. Man. It was fun though. Lots of shopping, lots of chilling. But the winter
and
time.
And then you came back. And then where'd you go to school for your media studies?
This place called Brooks College in Long Beach for the animation, and then AIU for the bachelor's in media production.
Cool. And then you worked for Henson for a while.
I worked at Activision.
Oh, cool, man.
Then this place called Motion Analysis. And we were stationed on the Jim Henson lot.
Yeah. It's fun.
Hey, you're getting better with sparring, too.
I feel like it. I feel like, and watching... what's that other guy's name that was sparring after me?
Sam?
Sam. Yeah, watching Sam spar. It's like, that's what I was doing in the beginning, where you get so tense, because after someone starts punching at you, you're so tense, and so you're, like, flexing the whole time. And then you don't realize that you're gassing out, because it's like you're, like, lifting all these weights... It's because you're just, like, so tensely, like, white-knuckle covering yourself up.
Yep.
So I just really learned that you can throw a couple punches, relax and breathe.
Relax, recover. You know?
Yeah.
And once again, like Bruce Lee said in that movie, you got to stay, you know, not tense, but ready.
Yeah.
You know? Just relax.
Just flow with it, you know?
Yeah.
And then just don't even... And also, I used to telegraph my things, you know? You always talk about, like, if people are doing certain movements and they're setting certain things up, and you really want to, like, not even set up moves, because then you're going to start... Your body's going to start telegraphing to your opponent.
Yeah.
So instead of just, like, flow and then react... You know, if there's a certain amount of space for you to pull off a move, do it. Do it fast and then react to the situation.
But another thing, I've noticed a lot of people, they don't set up their kicks or anything with their punches. They don't do any type of combination. You know, just one jab.
Right.
One jab.
Yeah.
Cross. Kick.
Because when you get a 1-2 off and then they have to block, that's when the body's open. So you got to go, bop-bop, kick, bop-bop, kick, get in there.
Because you throw a flurry of things like a full combination, they can block some maybe, but they can't block all of it.
Yeah. And you want to build chaos in your opponent's mind of just like, oh, too many things are happening. I can't block it. I'm too... And then they get gassed out because they're nervous.
Yeah, they start using emotion.
And then, you know, they'll leave themselves open and bam.
Well, just keep practicing. That's all. But you're doing good, man. Just keep up the good work. Keep taking yourself serious with it and taking the art serious.
Yeah. And I feel like it's one of those things. It's like, you know, I did improv comedy a lot, and I find it's the same thing. It's like the more you put into improv, the more you get from it. The more you put into Muay Thai, the more you get from it.
Man.
And I feel like it's like the more, when you see the way, it's like that book, The Art of War. When you see mastery in one thing, you can know it in different things. It's like I feel like almost I mastered improv. I spent like 9 years doing it. And then so now I'm like, oh, it's still like, you know, you get this muscle memory and then it's just reacting to the moment.
Yeah.
Like,
I tell people all the time, a comment you just made, like, they ask me all the time, how long is it going to take me to get to this level? How long is it going to take me to get good and do this and blah, blah, blah? It's all what you put into it, man. It's all on you. You put in a lot, you get a lot back.
Mm-hmm.
You get results.
You get shredded. Well, hey, thanks a lot for being my guest. Jonathan Atkinson, Muay Thai Academy of America.
Thanks for having me. Check
him out. Italian man named Romeo was jailed for being too good at sex. You know, he was jailed for noisy lovemaking. So he was given a 6-month jail sentence after 12 neighbors complained that his girlfriend's loud moaning. Now, I really think that there's kind of like a weird syndrome here where his girlfriend was the one who was making all the noise, but he was just like, you know, it's like his dick. They blamed his dick because they were like, that dick is going into that girl. She's moaning. It's involuntary. You know, she can't help it. What's she going to do?
His dick was like the Nixon, you know? Because it wasn't Nixon's fault.
Yeah, and it just like showed up unscathed on a gurney right next to JFK's head, you know what I mean? It's like, wait a minute, what kind of trial is this? It's a kangaroo court.
I had a roommate in New York who me and Devin both lived with, who was a waiter and also like a choral synchronizer, like choruses at Trinity Church.
Right.
And he was just like fucking, he also had a large history in stage combat. He was a jack of all trades. He was a mysterious man. And he'd like routinely consume either like a pint of ice cream or a bag of frozen peas. You know? He was like a mystery man. And he was like kind of like simultaneously like ripped and a little kind of chubby, but it was like kind of like, he was kind of like old time strong, you know, like,
right.
You know, it was like kind of like, you know, not really in shape, but like kind of built, you know, like,
every now and then he would go through the thing of peas, which would flush out his system from the previous ice cream binge.
Yeah. He was like, you know, yeah, he was just like old time strongman strong, you know, he was just like, he looked like he could probably like kick your ass, but he was like, you know.
Yeah, like he couldn't really play basketball, but if you like you gave him an axe, he could throw it like 100 yards.
Oh yeah, and he had like the most hilarious peeing in public circumstance I've ever seen ever. He was New Year's Eve, and we were like having a good time, and he had to pee, and I was like, oh man, what are we gonna do? Like, because I had to pee too, and he's like, I'm just gonna pee right here as I walk, you know? And I'm like, what? And then next thing I know, like he's got his dick out. Right? And he's just like walking and just like pissing as he's walking. Like full strut, like it's nothing. He's
around
like,
no. New York City?
Yeah. He's like, no, you're stupid if you step in a corner like that. It's like you can get like nabbed for doing that, but like nobody knows if you're just like walking and pissing at the same time. So it was just right, like we were walking stride for stride and he was just like pissing.
So his reason for it was that a burglar could come up to him and hit him over the head. So like the way to trick a burglar is
no, it was like more for like it was
forward.
More for cop stuff, you know, it's like, you know, like,
oh, I see. Like, a cop would go, hey, you can't be in public.
Yeah, New Year's Eve and stuff, you know, like, really? So he's just, like, walking, like, in this suit. It's, like, pissing his blood.
Can you imagine? It's like, snowy outside, and he's just leaving, like, neon yellow fucking ribbons everywhere. And it's like, that's not alerting the cops. The fucking, the steam coming off your yellow ribbon fucking piss streams.
But anyway, he was...
He has it all figured out. He's Mr. Man.
good man, nice man. But yes, I didn't look at his penis when he was pissing while we were walking. Obviously, you know, I averted my eyes courteously.
Yeah,
I averted my eyes
courteously,
with courtesy.
With Curtis? With Kurt?
In a courteous manner.
Yeah, there you go.
But he was kind of infamous in the apartment, like, because, like, me and Devin would hear him just rap, like, the, any girlfriend he had, we would hear him just, like, fucking, like, yelping.
Gorilla fucking it. Like, just crazy.
Like, yeah, it was, like, never him. It was just, like, these women, and we were, like, his suggested that he has a tendency to pick up women who were just, like, these loud, like, vivacious women who just, like, scream all the time.
See, I think that goes to the court case that we were talking about before with this Italian man, where it's, like, he was jailed because he was good at sex, you know, and he was making the women scream, so they were like, hey, you're going down for 6 months.
Or maybe he just had a tendency to pick up ladies who were loud, you know? Maybe that's on him a little bit, because maybe that's like kind of indication of like his kind of upbringing. Because maybe his mom was loud, or maybe his dad was too quiet,
or maybe they both were too quiet. Maybe when they consummated him, it was just like there was nary a sound whatsoever, and he was like, "Where's the passion in my life?" You know what I mean?
Because he could feel it even subconsciously as the sperm entering an ovum. He's like, "Man, it's really quiet." But in spermovimage, which is the language of sperm entering ovum.
Yeah. Like Aristotle and Plato, you know, Plato, they invented democracy. They were some of the first senators. They had a harem of, like teenagers of co-ed, you know, a harem and stuff like that. And they were senators, and it's, like, almost like, oh, like, in order for me to write all this philosophy down, I got a lot of good ideas, but before I can get started on that, let's set the harem up, let's set up, you know, democracy. It seemed like that was, like, the first order of business for those guys.
Saved by the Bell is based on the Allegory in the Cave.
Yes.
And it's about...
So are you talking out of turn about this, or has this been properly academically researched?
No, it's very much general. And I don't have to... If I learned anything from a liberal education, that I don't have to have knowledge of a subject to be an authority on it. Okay? So, yeah. Saved by the Bell is very much Allegory in the Cave, kind of extrapolated into a high school setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. Belding, obviously, Screech. There you go. You know, the various students, the school itself.
Yeah.
The theme song that would introduce the show, the credits, which would have the names of various personages who would have worked on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the syndication rights, which would have it be later rebroadcasted, and, you know, network television years after it had been, you know, no longer actively filmed.
You know, Plato was poisoned. After he wrote down all that philosophy stuff, you know, it's hard to look back at that stuff because it's like, was that a coup d'etat? Was he a bigot? You know, he was already a, you know, child molester, you know.
I think the biggest thing that, like, really crushed Plato was when Jenny got sick, you know? Because that was his
The metaphor for the, from Saved by the Bell, you just direct references.
No, from Plato, the movie, based on his life, you know.
Oh.
When Jenny gets sick. All-time best, like, hangout presses, probably, like, I mean, obviously JFK and Clinton would be, like, the best, like...
Yeah. Clinton, I think it would almost be, like, he would maybe have a dark side and, like, take you around in a limo and, like, shoot homeless people in New York City like that. There seems like he would do cocaine in just, like, one or two times.
He does so much, like, charitable shit, though.
Yeah, that's just his cover. That's just his front.
That's like a good premise for Training Day 2.
Yeah.
It takes place like 50 years in the future.
Uh-huh.
Like, Bill Clinton's still alive because he's developed the technology to live forever. But he's also used that technology to reanimate a younger John F. Kennedy. So now he's taking him around D.C.
They,
you know,
fall in love.
With the help of Secret Service, yeah. It's also a rom-com. So they kind of, like, start, like, falling for each other. JFK is like, what are we doing? Like, this, like,
yeah.
You know, like, I'm not this kind of guy. I don't go that way. And Bill's, like, you know, mission to your eye and, like, doing the thumb thing, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all, yeah, so it's, like, Training Day because there's a lot of, like, gang violence. And, like, he's, like, do these drugs and stuff. you know, which is cool.
I not have sex with that president.
Very much so.
Later, he's on that judicial committee at the end of the movie.
They're like getting consecutively impeached and just like lying.
Then they have to write a whole new amendment about cloned presidents and whether or not they can like reapply.
Yeah, because they're technically not the same body.
It's a different body, you know. But can they reapply for another 8 years? You know, they gotta have all kinds of different things.
So then they eventually decide to run on the same ticket. That's actually the end. The first they have a falling out because they're in love with the same girl, you know.
Yeah, and then they're in love with each other.
Hillary, Onassis, Rodham,
yeah.
Kennedy.
And then
Junior.
They reanimate Marilyn Monroe, so then there's that love triangle, too.
Yes, it's like a kind of a love quadrilateral.
Yeah.
But eventually, at the end, you know, the third act kind of like things like, what are we doing? Why don't we just run together?
Yeah.
It's like, you're right.
And then Lincoln, here's a real twist and bait.
Yeah.
Comes, he gets cloned, assassinates both of them.
Yeah.
What? An assassinated president assassinating the new clone president ticket? That's what happened.
But because of like a glitch in the reanimation technology, he has bat wings.
Yeah. So it's like a very, okay, when anyone can get into the genetic modification game, when there's like cloning technology, it's like someone's going to take Lincoln, they're going to put a little zombie in, they're going to put a little vampire in, they're going to put bat wings on it. And it's like, that's the future that we're going to have to live in, where people have this, you know, they can play God technology. They can make a Lincoln bat and a beaker.
And who's behind it? Who's the ultimate villain? Guess what? It's Nixon, but it's not really Nixon. But it is Nixon. But Nixon not as we know him. But Nixon as he truly was, Cher.
Cher?
Yeah.
Cher was the reanimation of Nixon?
Cher and Nixon have always been the same person.
Or was it that clone and those two personalities were so strong that that made a super person?
I maintain that Cher and Nixon have always been the same person.
Look, we are really going out on academic shaky ground where we're kind of coming up with these kinds of premises.
I might get S'd with a B in my H for saying this. But guess what?
Like shit with a bitch in your ass.
No, shit with a bullet in my
head. Oh, okay. But go on.
I might get peed in the D with my own A. But I maintain that Cher and Nixon have always been the same person.
Wow. I feel like these files are going to be confiscated by the NSA. And
yeah, if the NSA tries to F my A or J in my M, I'll just say the UEs, UGs,
yeah.
You guys, you know, that's your property now.
They don't look kindly to whistleblowers, you know.
Guess what? I'll be like, hey, guess what? I love whistling Dixie. If you guys wanna, you know, drug guys are trying to, you know, SD my D so I can't F,
yeah.
Or trying to P S up my A so I can't GF, you know.
Yeah, and that's their power, you know. The CIA, the NSA, the HS, you know, all these acronyms, when you start, you have so much more time in your day when you scrunch down all the things, all the threats that they're giving you if they're gonna, you're gonna release their information. So, it's like, that's just proof that you're like, you know their lingo here, kind of like, I'm just trying to translate some of his jargon because it's been pretty, a lot of revelations have happened.
Oh.
Earlier on this podcast, I talked about how when I was in Sedona, Arizona, I met a psychic who explained to me that the CIA came in and was like, hey, we'd like to recruit you to the CIA. We know that you're a psychic. I'm psychic, so I can spot all the psychics. I work for the CIA, by the way. Hey, we need to recruit you for our services. And he said, hey, listen, I already told your associate there. The answer is no. We've been communicating this whole time. That's how psychic I am. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's a long story without any evidence whatsoever that I brought forth, but it just shows you kind of a glimpse of also the training that you got. And I understand that they used a lot of dinosaurs. They had a dinosaur imagery they shook at you to kind of unearth your animal instincts.
Yeah, you kind of take it to a place where, you know, you were kind of, you know, you were kind of made to think like one of them.
Yeah.
And by one of them, I don't mean like a member of like the, you know, armed services. I mean like a member of, you know, being a dinosaur, you know, which are obviously huge, you know,
reptiles.
They're They very much pre... Sorry.
It's okay. It's not that.
They're very much prehistoric lizards who are very much larger than other lizards.
Okay. Well, okay. No, okay, I just want to put some things in context right now, and I know this is very difficult for you, but it's just... People think
should
of...
Should I take a break? Should I take a break?
Hold on. I just want to... Just stay here just for a second. I want to explain something about conspiracies. Now, people think... They go back. They think, oh, who took over the banking industry? Who took over this? Who took... Is there some kind of orchestrated, you know, propaganda machine behind everything? What came first? If you're in a board meeting with a dinosaur, it's going to be very intimidating. Okay? So who do you think runs shit? Okay? There's a couple dinosaurs left. They're very powerful politically, okay? I don't want to, like, burst anyone's fucking bubble in that they think that we actually elect presidents. But if you actually go back to the first sentient mammals that could eat flesh, I'd say it's dinosaurs. Go on, you met these people. These dinosaurs. Sorry.
I don't want to get a B in my B. T in the T. But I will say... But there have been three names that have always been in my brain because I know that they are irrevocably indisconnectable. And those names are Richard Milhouse Nixon, Cher.
Cher's coming up a lot today.
And dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Very much the same person.
Yeah. So... if you're playing the game at home, I want you to take three index cards. I want you to write Cher on one. I want you to get a map of New York City. I want you to put Cher index card, put that with a thumbtack into Soho. Okay? Take dinosaurs. I want you to go over to the Queensboro Expressway. Boom. Queens. Boom. That's a fucking dino epicenter. When it's go up to Harlem, Nixon, boom, take that index card, boom, plug it together, connect it with string, you're starting to see the pattern develop. You're starting to see the wicked tapestry and all of its glory in front of you.
Yes. I don't know what's going to happen here, but as long as you are loud, it will never be not quiet.
All right, well, I really don't think we can have any other further statements because we've incriminated ourselves. We're going to get F'd in our A's. We're going to get C in our M's. We're going to get, you know, we're going to get the full gambit.
You want to P my E's out of my H so
yeah.
You can F my S?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? There's B's in there, so it will explode.
Yeah, they're going to sting you, okay?
Yeah.
So we also have ways of protecting ourselves. I want to thank Anthony Carino, and I want to thank Jonathan Atkinson, my Muay Thai Academy of America trainer. This has been a double episode, double guests, so I think we've learned a lot of disturbing information. All right. That's another episode of the Highway of Motherfucking Diary. Later.